Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Newspaper headline from January 21st, 2010. My birthday last Friday. Headline: how bad for the environment can throwing away one plastic bottle be? 30 million people wonder. From The Onion, America's finest news source. Dateline Washington, wishing to dispose of the empty plastic container and failing to spot a recycling bin nearby, an estimated 30 million Americans asked themselves Monday how bad throwing away a single bottle of water could really be. It's fine, thought Maine native Sheila Hodge, echoing the exact sentiments of Chicago area resident Philip Rogowski, recent Florida transplant plant Margaret Lowry, and Kansas City business owner Brian McMillan, as they tossed the polyethylene terephthalate object into an awaiting trash can. It's just one bottle, and I'm usually pretty good about this sort of thing. Not a big deal, continued roughly one-tenth of the nation's population. According to the inner monologue of millions upon millions of citizens, while not necessarily ideal, throwing away one empty bottle probably wouldn't make that much of a... continued on page 5. a difference, and could even be forgiven considering how long they had been carrying it around with them, the time that could be saved by just tossing it out right here, and the fact that they had bicycled to work once last July. What a great country. Yeah.
The following program is a paid production of Mike Novak, LLC. The opinions, rants, confessions, and lame jokes presented are not necessarily the views of WCPT or its parent corporation, NewsWeb Radio. Besides, if Mike was running for office, the tapes of these shows alone would get him kicked off the ballot. Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. Podcasts of this program, along with green tips, valuable links, and DeMaio weather, are a click away at MikeNovak.net. That's MikeNovak.net. Now here's the man who sees green everywhere he looks, mainly because he's colorblind, Mike Novak.
Welcome back. Where did we go? I don't know where we were.
I think a lot of people ask themselves that question, and no one really quite knows the answer.
Well, welcome back to the show on a Sunday. What a week. What a strange week. Let's start with one thing here. In the words of Dick Kay, we're local, we're live, and we're not going anywhere.
You got it.
For those of you who read about the demise of Air America this week, well, we're not Air America. We're WCPT. We are Chicago's Progressive Talk. And the weekend shows are actually even less connected to all of that because we're all here, live, doing our thing. Dick Kay, local live. Jake Hartford, local live.
Yep, liberal talk radio in Chicago isn't going anywhere.
Mike Mighty House, local live.
Mike Novak Show.
Mike Novak Show, local live. Family Values with an Oy Vey, local live. And so tune in. Tell your friends we're here. Join us on Sundays. This is Self-Help Sunday from 8 a.m. to noon every Sunday on WCPT. Now, I just got back yesterday. Okay, man, it's been a long couple of days because now you know what it's like to schlep up to northern Wisconsin because your family has
cabins up there.
Mm-hmm. up there. I went to Stevens Point on Friday, and a little frustrating because I wanted to be here for the Tom Hartman event, but I'd had this engagement scheduled for 6 months, and it was called Garden Visions 2010, sponsored by the North Central Wisconsin Master Gardeners.
I bet you it was beautiful.
Well, it was when going up. Coming back, couldn't see anything. It was all
fog.
I'm going to have to talk to Rick DeMaio when we do the weather segment at 8:30 today. It was just fog. But going up there, the snow was gorgeous, and the ride was clear. I was real happy that, when they scheduled this, I thought, January 23rd,
yeah.
22nd, and 23rd, driving up 5 hours
going north
to Wisconsin. kind of opposite Green Bay there. That ought to be a challenge. But as it turned out, the only challenge was a little fog on the way back, and that wasn't a problem. Here's the thing, though. Have you heard of a franchise? I don't even know if it's a franchise. It was a bar at the Ramada Inn where they were holding this conference called the Tilted Kilt.
No. And I'm Irish, too. You think I'd know it if it involved kilts.
No, eh?
No.
No, eh?
Out of curiosity, were they part of the club, or?
It's not what you think. You would think it was guys.
Yeah.
Guys with hairy legs,
yeah.
All right?
A tendency to enjoy the whiskey.
No. Not that at all. It was like a Hooters.
That I've heard of. That is a franchise and a chain. It's new. I have heard of that now that you say that.
All right. Here's the first thing.
Well-endowed women in tiny plaid skirts.
No, not even well-endowed women.
In Chicago, they're well-endowed.
Yeah, up there, they're the college kids.
Oh.
All right?
Oh.
They're babies.
Yeah.
It's like walking into a Hooters, and here we have 500 at this conference, 500 basically middle-aged women.
Yeah.
And the only place to eat there in the building, I mean, you could go down the block, but the place that's attached is this thing where these girls are wearing short kilt skirts,
yeah.
Bare midriffs,
yeah.
And then they have these push-up things where
yeah.
they got their boobs,
yeah.
Turns
molehills into mountains.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And we were appalled. And I thought Wisconsin was a progressive state.
Oh, God. No.
Not that
part of it.
If you go to Madison, maybe.
It's wonderful with its natural resources. It's got a great DNR department. It's like the state parks of Wisconsin outshine Illinois 10-1 and how they're kept and there's no graffiti.
The highways outshine Illinois.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, my goodness. They were pristine.
Yeah.
They were flat and smooth.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'll drive in Wisconsin any day of the week.
And when you step, if you go at least 4 hours north, the second you step out of your car, you can smell the air difference. I mean, couldn't you
Yeah, but
lush,
then we walk into this tilted kilt.
Yeah.
That was appalling.
I go so far into northwest Wisconsin that, you're lucky if you get, a barkeep with a full set of teeth. And I speak the truth.
Okay.
But yeah, it's all farms and small communities where like the whole town lives and dies by the high school football team.
My goodness.
That sort of cliche.
I had two seminars on Saturday yesterday, and I'm telling you the North Central Wisconsin Master Gardeners were just fabulous. Paul Tukey was there from safelawns.org, and he showed his movie A Chemical Reaction, which we're trying to get to Chicago because it talks about the dangers of putting chemicals on your lawn. It talks about the dangers of weed and feed, and believe me, folks, weed and feed is dangerous. There's just no two ways about it.
It's pesticide.
It's poison. The only reason they call it weed and feed is because nobody would buy it if they called it poison and fertilizer, which is what it is.
Weed and feed is catchy.
But, the sort of the goofy, weird out-of-body experience was the tilted kilt. It's like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, no.
No, and they weren't. So, no. we registered our complaints with the Ramada. And and I don't know if it's, you know, the chain Ramada probably has nothing to do with it. I mean, the reason it was at this place is there were 500 people.
Yeah.
How many facilities do you have Wausau Way and Stevens Point Way with 500?
And the bottom line is, sadly, boobs sell all the time.
No, that's not true. No, it's not. Well, no. Sorry.
Really?
Wrong answer. No. You had 500 people who want to use a convention center and were all appalled and are all registering their complaint.
Good.
All right? So they don't.
Yeah.
To the toothless guys that you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and then on every magazine and every billboard and, you know, everywhere
I know
you go.
I know that. But there are, you know, I'm not a prude.
Yeah.
All right? And I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I just thought, get out of here.
Yeah.
This is a joke,
I'm sure I'm sure that's not the standard type of convention they get that way anyway, you know?
They get the convention I don't know.
Yeah.
What did they get, the deer hunters
there? Exactly, the deer hunters, the boats, the cars and RVs, fishing.
Well, it was interesting. All right, but let's get Ken on the phone, let's get Pam on the phone. So that was my weekend experience, but it was really fun. Talking to the 500, and I don't get to talk to 500 people in a room very often. I mean, it was packed, and a lot of great seminars up there, and I doubt that any of them they're all sleeping in today, so they're probably not catching the show, and to get it, they'd have to be listening online anyway. Today, though, I got there's a lot of stuff on the show, and I got to get to it. Ken Dunn is going to be here. Ken Dunn is a Chicago icon, all right, and he has been working on recycling in Chicago for 35, 40 years at a time when nobody was doing it, out in the wilderness. We're going to start with him, and there's a festivity in his honor this Wednesday at the Wellington Avenue United Church of Christ at 615 West Wellington in Chicago, and I'm going to be the MC. We'll talk about that in a second. Rick DeMaio is here at 8:30, as always, to do the weather segment on the show. And then, you know, in the second I start doing this is when I lose. There we are. And then Randy Blankenhorn from Go to 2040 is going to be on the program at 9 o'clock, and this is something that we talked about last summer. He was on the program, and it was your chance to vote on how you wanted the region's transportation and other systems to develop. It was a project called Invent the Future, and 20,000 people voted on it, including me, online. And we're going to talk about what the results were. Randy is with the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, or CMAP, and he will be here, and we'll talk about that. And then we're going to talk about growing fruit in the city with the Chicago Rarities Orchard Project, growing trees that will produce fruit, and a big event coming up at Uncommon Ground Restaurant tomorrow night. But before all of this happens, let us go to line one, and let's bring in Ken. Ken Dunn, how are you, Ken?
Fine, Mike.
Good morning, and thank you for being on the show.
Thanks.
And then on line two, we've got Pam Richard. How are you doing, Pam?
I'm doing pretty good, Mike.
And did I pronounce your name correctly?
Yeah, Richard. That's close enough.
Richard, okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Pam is with Eco Justice Collaborative, is it Eco Justice Collaborative that's putting this together, or is it some other organization?
Oh, well, no. This time it's Wellington Avenue United Church of Christ.
So it is just the church themselves putting this together.
Yes, indeed.
And their award is the 5th Annual Elizabeth I. Benson Award. What's that all about?
Well, we have, for the past 5 years, been seeking people in the city of Chicago out who, in our view, are really contributing positively to our city. And in this year, we are focusing on environmental justice and economic justice. And actually, Wellington is a small church in Lakeview that's got a mission of social justice and has had ever since its inception. So this is very typical for us to do, and the award is named after Elizabeth Benson, who is what we consider to be an unsung hero that we wanted to lift up. This woman has been working with folks on death row forever and ever and ever. And so we're taking the opportunity to say, you know, there's a lot of good stuff happening in Chicago, and there's a lot of people who aren't getting recognition for it. There are a lot of folks like Ken who are real change agents, and we want to make sure we lift the work that he's doing up for all to see.
Well, on my website, and if you want the information on this and anything else I talk about on the show today, you go to mikenowak.net, MikeNowak.net/thisweek. I say on the site that Ken's an icon. And I hate to embarrass you, Ken, but you are. You are an icon, especially when it comes to recycling and reuse and taking the what we have and putting it back to good use. And I want to congratulate you for all the work you've done over the years. And you founded the Resource Center and City Farm. If you want to know what City Farm is, if you're listening to the show, you drive past Clyburn and Division and you see the farm there in that wedge of land. That's City Farm. That's what Ken did, part of the Resource Center. How long ago did you start all this, Ken?
Well, the Resource Center work began in the late 60s, and thank you for all the compliments, but I have to disclose that everything you refer to is the work of the nonprofit Resource Center, which includes not only myself, but a lot of friends here in Chicago, including Dan Dale, who leads the social justice work at the Wellington Church. It should be pointed out that he was an early board member of the Resource Center, and in the early 70s recognized the need for doing curbside pickup of recycling. And so he initiated the Resource Center's first program of curbside recycling, and I believe it was the first curbside recycling in Illinois. So the Resource Center, I happen to have been involved with it from the start, but it's a collective effort. And basically, I think what would characterize everybody that's involved is people who come to the conclusion that business as usual in all fields, social justice, our economy, and our food system, isn't adequate, that life as we know it, the quality of life we depend upon, means the end of business as usual and moving toward more sustainable systems. So the Resource Center is a sustainability nonprofit, and we have, as you mentioned, programs in recycling, reuse, and urban agriculture, composting. Basically, we focus on wise use of resources for promoting quality of life in all our communities, therefore social justice.
One of the things you got to know about Ken, and you can tell just by listening to him, he's a philosopher. Mm-hmm. And actually, don't you have a philosophy degree?
I do. I came to Chicago to try to understand why our economy and other factors were lessening what I perceived to be the quality of life we enjoy. And I did get a degree from the University of Chicago and got a pretty good education of where one should apply one's efforts to work towards social justice and the sustainability of our way of life.
And you know, a couple of weeks ago, I was talking on the show about the winter farmers markets, and I was talking about. Did you get to see? I'm sure you've met Will Allen many times, but he spoke on the South Side, for Martin Luther King weekend. The whole idea is that food justice is social justice. But you would take that a step further, I assume, Ken, and say that, you know, quality of life is about the things we produce and how we dispose of them, and that means not just dumping them in the ocean, not just dumping them into landfills, but finding valuable ways to reuse and also thinking about what we buy and whether we should buy it and whether we're buying too much stuff. I imagine to you these are all kind of the same idea.
Yeah, thanks for bringing Will into the picture. We've been friends and noticed that our work is parallel for a number of years. Actually, what we're asking people to consider the possibility of is, you know, we've recently been a little worried about the selling of the Skyway and the selling of the parking meters that we're, in fact, selling off the future viability of our city. But I think each individual should think whether we're involved in an economy that is also selling off our future. That is, our growth and means of production is beyond the Earth's air carrying capacity. We can't continue these systems. As we know, climate change is pretty much recognized. And as climate change, because of our way of producing things, we're going to have less ability to produce the things that are necessary for the quality of our life, mainly food. And I think what Will and I have often talked about, and more people are coming to understand, is that we need to start with rethinking what an economy is. It's not how we keep the complexity of our modern economy going. I think history would point out that most civilizations have evolved into more and more complex forms, and they eventually fail because they're unable to maintain that complexity. And I think the economic collapse of 2008 is a very good example of us being less and less able to manage our complexity. That's another argument, but I think what everybody would agree is that it's time we start thinking of an economy as if people matter, as if people matter. That is, that we would start using local resources and using those to produce things that people need, and not so much depend on cheapness because of we export raw materials to other countries and import materials for them, but rather look at a local neighborhood and see what its resources are and how we could manage those resources to improve the quality of life, not only for that local community, but for the city as a whole.
Let's get back to that in a second, Ken. Obviously, that's big picture, and I want to get to little picture. A couple of things I want to mention first. Of course, Will Allen is the founder of Growing Power, and he spoke at KAM Isaiah Israel the other week. I'm talking to Ken Dunn, who's one of the driving forces behind the Chicago Resource Center and City Farm, and also Pam Richard of EcoJustice Collaborative, and we're talking about the 5th Annual Elizabeth I. Benson Award this Wednesday, January 27th, 6 p.m. at the Wellington Avenue United Church of Christ, and I want to get into that specific a little bit. Pam, there's going to be, it's only $15.
Right.
I'm going to be emceeing. The Bullfrogs will be singing, and I got to hear them sing when I hosted or emceed the Illinois Sierra Club event.
Right, I learned that. Yes.
And what else is going to happen this Wednesday?
We're going to start with a reception, and the folks at Wellington are going to contribute to the food piece, but so is Frontera Grill and North Pond. So some of the produce that Ken raises at City Farm goes right to those restaurants. So we thought it would be fun to bring them in. And they'll provide some really good stuff, I'm sure. There will be wine. All the food and drink is for free. The socialization should be fun before the program begins at 7. So 6 p.m. reception.
Yeah, you can socialize for free without using Twitter or Facebook.
Yeah, one of those things that we seem to be losing in our society today, right?
Yes, the ability to talk one-on-one, yes.
Right. And so our program begins at 7 p.m., and it will also include some time to recognize our own Betty Benson. She, at the age of 93 now, I think, embodies all the kinds of things you were hearing Ken speak about. And so I think that's an important piece of what we're going to do. Then we bring on the fanfare for Ken and all the crew that work with him. There'll be a slide presentation set to music. There'll be song by the Bullfrogs. There'll be testimonies by fans and friends, including Dan Dale, who did indeed work side by side with Ken in those early years, as did Nancy Jones, who will also have a few words to say. And
is it okay if Ken, and I'll ask you this too, can I bring a clean shirt for you? You got to know Ken. He's always in the compost pile. So it's and you know he's been there. And I remember back when I was working at the Gargantua Radio down the dial, and we were on the showcase studio, and Ken came into the studio, and I said, Ken, did you just crawl out of the compost pile here? And it's like, and I know you do it. You're working all the time, and you talk about a hands-on guy. Ken is, that's what makes you so admirable is that you don't sit up in, even though you're a philosopher, you don't sit up in the ivory tower and wonder about these issues. You go out there and you get them done. And I think that's, we're going to hear a lot of that kind of testimonial, don't you think, Pam?
We are, and I long for the day when everybody shows up with dirty shirts and dirty fingernails.
Me
you know?
Too.
I mean, that's what we should be doing, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Well, Mike,
yeah.
I will take a minute and stop back home, but I think your point to what this is all about, our work together is not so much individual labor, but it's enjoying the pleasure of working together for something we truly believe in. And so I'm glad to have so many partners. And the celebration will be about everybody working together for a world that has more equality and justice and higher quality of life for everyone.
We are just getting to 8:30. Heather, tell Rick that, as usual, he's going to be a little late because I have a couple more questions that I have for Ken. Pam, the information, as I said, is on my website. People can link to it and look for the Wellington Avenue United Church of Christ link, which is, and that, of course, is http://wp.waucc.org if you want to go there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a lot easier just to go to my site and link on to it.
Or just type in www.waucc.org. It gets you right there.
Yeah, if you just do Wellington Avenue, mm-hmm. United Church of Christ, a lot of people who are in the city know about this church. From the minute I showed up in Chicago in 1978, I knew about this church.
It'll be good to have you there in that church then, Mike.
It's been a long time since I've been in the church.
Yeah.
Oh, I've been in there before. It's been a long time, and I'm looking forward to it. So, Pam, I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
It's going to be fun. Like you said, $15.
And one last thing. We're all hopeful people would also want to sponsor the event. All proceeds are going to go to the Resource Center. And in this time of economic stress, anything we can do to help keep that work alive would be a good thing.
Great.
So check that out.
I forgot to mention that, and you're right. And you also say nobody will be turned away. So if you don't have $15, show up anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I look forward to seeing everybody there on Wednesday.
And you and I are going to talk in the next day or two.
we sure are.
We'll work it out.
In a row. Okay.
I'll talk to you later.
Bye bye. Bye bye.
And that leaves us with Ken Dunn on the line. And I wanted to get to some specifics here, Ken, because you know the Resource Center has been in the forefront of recycling in Chicago, and you guys work. Pick up recycling, you know, you're a private contractor that does that, but I wanted to get your sense of the state of recycling as a whole in the city of Chicago, given that the blue cart rollout in the city of Chicago has been suspended, and might some of the pickups might even be rolled back. What are we looking at as a whole in the city of Chicago regarding recycling?
Well, we're again at the stage where we have to consider whether we can choose better. The rage across the country has been a single stream, and that means all recyclables collected together, sent to an immense capital-intensive plant for separation to feed the world market. And Chicago made that decision when the world economy was booming, the commodity prices on the world market were very high, and it seemed to make sense. We're in a different economy now. The economy has retracted, and the older model of source separation, which fed the local industry, is proving more cost-effective. So I think the city enrolling or suspending its rollout was aware of this, and it should consider the less fuel invested in recycling by just collecting it locally to feed the local markets, and that's more cost effective. So I think we shouldn't end our participation in the programs that are out there. All Chicagoans should recycle and use the single stream, but we need to evolve a more cost-effective recycling system, which is a local recycling system, to make sure our papers are used here in mills in town, or at least just within a mile of the city limits.
Yeah, how do we get local recycling to go to local mills instead of being shipped to China or someplace else overseas?
Well, the international market has traditionally been fed with second-rate materials, not the highest quality and not the cleanest. There's a great demand internationally for this second-rate product, but there's inefficiencies, like the local mill, FutureMark and Alsip, finds that using the single-stream paper results in a fiber coming in that has a little bit of grit or broken glass attached to it, and that wears their pumps and the seals on those pumps 10 times as fast as it used to be. So they find in order to economically produce paper, it's better to use locally produced or locally collected source-separated paper and not go the extra trouble of replacing machinery all the time because of its abrasive content.
Yeah, now, you know, you're getting into some of the arcane parts of this that I think a lot of people, frankly, can't follow. Let's explain briefly. Single stream is what you get when you throw all of your recyclables into one bin, and then when they go to what's the place where they separate the stuff? What do they call that, Ken?
A recycling plant.
Yeah, right. Okay. And they separate them, and there's machinery that does that now, and it's separated pretty sophisticatedly. It's pretty efficient. But the problem is that glass breaks. And that's providing some kind of contamination now, of especially paper, right, Ken?
Yeah, so that's the problem there. But each of the materials we collect in recycling can feed a global economy, which we realize cannot keep at its present rate. Like, we have to keep materials local rather than sending most of our steel and paper to China to buy it back. All of this transportation costs money, and we need to put all of our available resources into developing our local community and our local industry. Another sort of intricacy that the public might not know, FutureMark paper, just a mile outside of the city limits, could produce all of the magazine and high-gloss paper the city of Chicago needs, but only a small portion of what they produce is used here. And it depends as much on the relation between the euro and the dollar as on any other things. That is, a paper company and mill, a mill in Germany produces an equal sheet, but often paper from Chicago is shipped to foreign mills, and then we buy the foreign paper just because of the world monetary system.
You know, we have to think locally. We have to think, how do we separate things? A couple of things I think you and I would agree that would be a good thing is a bottle bill for Illinois, you know, operate like Michigan and a lot of Maine and a bunch of other states do, and get a deposit back for your bottles. Unfortunately, the industry fights so hard against that, but it's better for recycling if we can separate out our bottles. The other problem we have, of course, is in Chicago and proper, that the city's recycling effort has been so awful for so long. We're finally getting to the point where we get people to deal with single stream. I don't know how we could possibly turn our backs on that, and we don't want to. We want people to do single stream. We want them to recycle, basically. But they're still throwing blue bags into their blue carts because they think the blue bag still has something to do with recycling. I mean, it's when you educate people in one area for so long, it gets burned into their brains, and then you shift course, and they get confused. How do we deal with that, Ken?
Well, I think you're suggesting something that we should be doing. We should first understand that recycling is part of us all living ethical lives, that every material we touch, we should be as responsible as possible. So use any recycling system that's available to you rather than abstain because you don't understand it. So the city should begin taking its recycling system seriously, state, we, because of budget problems, can provide only this now. You might have to travel a distance to use a drop-off, and those of you who have blue carts, use them and invite your neighbors to join you in using your cart. So we just have to accept, both as a city and as residents, that recycling is important, and inform ourselves how to do it and use our systems. But remember that if we stagnate at any one point, we're not doing our best. So we now know that we should evolve ways of feeding a local recycling system and doing it more economically so it doesn't take away from other needed services in the city of Chicago.
There he is, activist, philosopher, recycling icon, Ken Dunn. You got to go to my the homepage of my website, Ken. Kathleen put a little a caricature of you.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to like it.
Okay.
Go to the homepage. It's kind of fun. And I hope everybody else listening will do that and will consider, well, first of all, recycle. Check out the Resource Center. Check out City Farm. And if you can, come to the award ceremony at the Wellington Avenue United Church of Christ this Wednesday at 6 for the 5th Annual Elizabeth I. Benson Award. And Ken will be there, and I'll be there, and Pam will be there, and it'll be a great time. Ken, we're going to talk more about this in the future, but thank you for being on the show.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Take care. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We're going to get right to Rick DeMaio weather, only 10 minutes late. But who's counting? If a new commitment to indoor gardening is on your list of New Year's resolutions, take time to take a look around the house and tend to some of those all-important indoor gardening tasks you know you've been neglecting. Unruly and root-bound houseplants will thrive with a little TLC, some fresh soil, and a new roomy pot from SIDS Greenhouses. SIDS can help with the right soil mixes and fertilizers for every plant, and one of Chicagoland's largest assortments of decorative pots and pottery. In fact, SIDS has just received a truckload shipment of pottery, and of course, they have a great selection of lush tropical houseplants as well. Remember, houseplants not only look great, they also help improve indoor air quality. And it's not too early to plan this year's flower and vegetable garden. I was going to say, yeah, you got to be planning that right now. Get your seeds. SIDS can help. Their shipment of flower and vegetable seed packets is in. And you know the popular varieties go fast, so visit SIDS early for the best selection, including certified organic seeds. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard.
Attention teachers! Want your class to really engage in American history? OneHistory.org has presentations that make history come alive. A 10-year-old Civil War powder monkey. A Depression-era 7-year-old pushing a horse plow. A group of teenage girls facing off against Southern bigots in the Civil Rights Movement. We know how to reach your students. Whether it's for a history class or providing a context for American literature, our presentations get to the heart of history. OneHistory.org. The truth is in the details. Check out our website, www.onehistory.org. That's www.onehistory.org. Or call us at 216-956-6300. 216-956-6300.
It keep raining and raining. Oh, tears from my eyes. Since you've been gone, all I do is cry. cry.
It's the Mike Novak Show.
Won't somebody help me?
And it keeps raining and raining, and that's why we're talking to Rick DeMaio. How you doing, Rick?
Doing fine. This is great weather, isn't it?
You know, I was coming out this morning, and I was thinking, this is like Seattle in the winter. It's a lot like this. It's just like 40s and raining constantly,
right.
And drizzly, mm-hmm. And foggy, and yeah.
You spent some time out there, didn't you?
Yeah, I did, about 18 years, so I know what it's like. I mean, not totally out there. I mean, I had a vacation house out there, and
right.
It was just, and this is a Seattle winter right now,
yeah.
Just like this.
This is the kind of weather that if you were scheduled to do a radio hit at 8:30, you would get up at about 8:29, do the radio hit at 8:45, and then go back to bed at about 8:59.
There you go. That's perfect. Hey, and speaking of weather, I'm all about letting you get back to bed as quickly as you want. All right.
No, I'm kidding. I'm up.
I know you're not. Well, since you're a public service guy, Jim from Gurnee is on the line with a question for you, Jim.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm great. I listen to you every week. I'm a bird watcher, and a lot of times I'm, you know, in between stops, and I'm always listening to your reports and your show, and I love listening to the weather reports. And this next weekend, we're taking the whole family up to northern Minnesota, pretty much like a stone's throw away from Canada. Right now, they're getting a pretty big snowstorm, but I was wondering mm-hmm. if you had any idea what it's going to be like next weekend. It looks like cold air is coming back in. Does it look like we're going to need more snow up there for our dry?
And where did you say exactly you're going in Canada?
It's actually northeastern Minnesota.
I'm sorry, northeastern Minnesota.
About 110 miles north of Duluth, up by Grand Marais. So,
oh, okay, I know where that is. Well, right now, Jim, it seems like most of their snow is beginning to wind down, and even though that the system that's moving through will probably give them, anywhere between about 2 and maybe 6 inches, depending on where they are. It hasn't been a real big storm, but looking at the snowfall coverage right now, Duluth, Minnesota, as of yesterday, the new observations aren't in yet, but they have 17 inches of snow on the ground.
Yikes!
That part of the United States has really gotten hit hard with quite a bit of snow, particularly because a lot of the snow that's fallen hasn't melted. They've been in one of these situations where every time they've gotten snow, it basically has been, hasn't had a chance to melt yet. Now, the bottom line is that this situation, most of the snow has gone south of them, so they've probably got maybe about 2 inches additional. But from what I can see, if you're going up there next weekend, Jim, now you're planning on doing a lot of, obviously, walking outside, right?
Yeah, we're looking for wildlife birds. We're going to do some cross-country skiing and snowshoeing, so we actually, we're hoping for snow.
Okay, well, the good thing about it is,
from
what I can see, even though the cold air comes in, what you wanted, obviously, in that kind of weather or that kind of environment is sunshine, not a lot of wind, so you can enjoy
right.
the outdoors. And I think you're going to get it because Saturday, from what I can see, even though it's going to be cold with probably temperatures in the single digits, it doesn't look like there's anything in the way of any big Arctic blast that come back in there. So I wouldn't be surprised if the temperatures actually begin to moderate a little bit by Saturday and Sunday next week. You could be, say, maybe in the upper teens to lower 20s, and there is actually another storm system that comes through Chicago and probably gives us a little bit of a warm-up by Saturday and Sunday of next week, but that's going to be short-lived. So you have maybe 2 days of weather, probably in the upper teens to near 20, and then it looks like it gets cold again by late Sunday. So if the late Sunday cold gets there obviously a little bit sooner, then you're dealing with some pretty chilly weather. But I have to ask this, why are you going up to the coldest part of the United States at the coldest time of the year to go bird watching?
Well, it's as a child, I've always loved animals and wildlife and birds, and northern mm-hmm. Minnesota is like one of the last places, unless you go way out west, where you can get timber wolves or gray wolves and bobcats and that type of thing. And there's been a pretty active wolf pack, which it's about 46 miles inland off of Grand Marais. So you're way in the boundary waters where you can't even get phone signals anymore. And they have a pack of wolves that's been coming around where we're staying, and we're
wow.
actually going, and they got a little program going on, so they're going to take us out in the middle of the night and start howling and try to get some responses back. So
wait, are you going to do the howling or the wolves?
We are going to do it and then hopefully get response.
Oh! Now, how do they? How do you do a wolf call? Can you do a wolf call for me?
Okay, I can try. Here we
all
go.
Right, here we go.
My wolf call is I'm getting out of here.
No, hang on just a second.
That was pretty good, Jim.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
You're not getting. I'm telling you, you're not getting wolf calls on any other radio station at this time on a Sunday.
Well, maybe up.
No,
the
you're
shirt,
not.
Maybe up.
The mic. Let me just give Jim the real quick and dirty here. Again, the storm that's going through there hasn't gotten there yet. They're kind of on the front edge of it. So I would say anywhere between now and probably Tuesday, they'll probably see a fresh coating. Additional of about 6 to 10 inches of snow. Then
right.
After that, it looks like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, not so much Monday, but Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and even into Sunday, doesn't look like anything in the way of any significant snow. So the 17 inches that you have on the ground around Grand Marais right now will probably be up around 2 feet by the time you get there, with highs
nice.
Probably close to about 15 on Saturday. And maybe 20 on Sunday. So
let
me know how it works out
for
you, okay?
What's that, Jim?
I don't mind the temperature as long as it's not real windy, you know, because we're all prepared for that.
Yeah, wind up there is a little bit difficult to predict 7 days out. But if you go on my website, DeMayoWeather.com, send me an email. I'll try to keep you up to date on that. Okay,
there you
Jim?
Go, Jim. Go to DeMayoWeather.com. Send Rick an email if you have any troubles. Get a hold of me because I've got a cell number and I can always track them down.
No.
A real quick question before I let you go, Jim. Is it easier to keep track of wolves or spot them when there's snow cover?
I'm sorry, is there what?
Is it easier to spot wolves when there's snow cover?
Evidently, we're going to be doing some tracking, too, and it's always nice to have a fresh blanket, a fresh canvas to look for them. But they typically have the same paths that they take, and we kind of go to where, if you can find where they had like a recent kill, they call it, they keep coming back to feed on it. Like if they take a deer down, they'll come back for several days and keep feeding on that deer, so it's always a good way to find them. But we've never actually seen them. We've seen the tracks before, and so this time, you know, we're going to be excited just to see the tracks, but it sounds like people are even seeing them along the road, which is very, very unique, even for up in northern Wisconsin, Minnesota. So.
All right, before you go, give me the wolf call one more time.
Not like what you heard up at the Sheridan, though.
You know, I suddenly have a hankering of... Oh, never mind. Wow. It wasn't a Sheridan. It was a Ramada.
Well stated, Jim.
Oh, dear. All right, Jim.
Have a good weekend, guys.
Have fun, all right? Thanks
Thank
for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good work. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And I guess that was kind of the forecast there, Rick. How does that affect us?
Well, you know what? Right now, the system that's beginning to affect parts of northern Minnesota is basically just producing rain over us. And it's interesting, like today is the first day that officially at O'Hare Field, they have not been able to measure an inch of snow because the rain and the warm weather and fog from last night has basically depleted the snowpack. You have to go all the way back to the 7th of December. That was the last time that we had 1 inch of snow on the ground. So if you think about that, you're talking, what is that, about 22... You're talking almost, what, 40 days of snow there?
Yeah.
We've had snow on the ground. And also the temperature last night, I don't know if you were out and about 9 or 10 o'clock, jumped to about 45 degrees.
I saw that on my computer. I have a little thing that we pop the temperature, O'Hare temperature pops up, and I looked at it and I thought, what's going on? It's 45 degrees at O'Hare.
Yeah, the warm front pushed north of us, and temperatures are still in the mid-40s right now. That's the warmest since back on the 2nd of December. Okay, so that's a pretty long time ago when you think about it. People were still not even putting Christmas lights up, and I still have to get my Christmas lights off my tree this weekend.
And recycle,
yeah.
Recycle the tree.
Yeah. But the bottom line is rain today, Mike, looks like the system eventually passes east of us sluggishly by about the noontime hour. Temperatures will be slow to fall from the upper 30s to the freezing mark. By about, say, 5, maybe 6 o'clock this afternoon. But we don't have to worry about any rain changing over to snow. This is just going to be more of a kind of a dry cold front that goes through. But I do think maybe later on tonight, and into tomorrow morning, most likely towards the morning rush hour, that's when I think there's a better chance we can see probably a little bit of light snow come back into the area. I think more so towards the middle of the day, we could see accumulation anywhere between about a half inch to maybe an inch here in the city, maybe a couple of inches in far northwestern Illinois. But by and large, this storm system generally passes well to the north of us. But by probably by late tomorrow afternoon and into tomorrow night, very windy, winds out of the west at about 20, maybe gusts of 30 miles per hour. And then this sets the stage for what appears to be more typical weather for this time of year. Pretty cold weather coming in here for Monday night into Tuesday. Temperatures probably in the mid-teens Tuesday morning, probably only in the mid-20s for Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And the good news is it'll be a lot warmer than what Jim's going to be having up in Grand Marais. But all in all, it looks like we get back into Arctic air probably for the rest of the week, and I don't see anything in the way of any mild weather coming back in here for quite some time. In fact, probably by sometime late next week, I should say, after next Tuesday and Wednesday, looks like we get back into the cold pattern. So
do we get
30s and 40s are gone. Looks like the 20s are here to stay.
Yeah, but the question is, do we get a snow to mitigate that? For if you're growing plants, this is what you fear, is that the snowpack disappears,
and then
you get in the teens or even worse, and those plants are not covered in the ground. I mean, obviously, that's why you put mulch, is to help keep the temperatures consistent, but also the snowpack is just a wonderful mulch.
I don't see anything in the way of any snow coming back in here. I know this has actually been a great period of snow melt and a slow warm up.
Now, if it's April, I'm happy with that. If it's January, I'm not so happy with it, you know?
Right, no, I understand. The best I can do for you is probably 1 to 2 inches between now and probably late Monday night. And after that, it looks like it just stays cold and no snow until maybe next weekend sometime. But the pattern just kind of gets cold and dry. And not atypical for this time of the year. I mean, we could do a little bit worse as far as the cold is concerned. Matter of fact, this past Tuesday was the 25th anniversary of the coldest day ever in Chicago, when we had a low of minus 26 and a high of minus 7. That's cold stuff.
The stuff
we've been having around here. Yeah. We haven't had a day where it's been below normal now for almost 2 weeks, and that pretty much lined up pretty well with our forecast a couple weeks ago, and he said it looks like we're headed into a mild pattern. And that's pretty much where we're going. Matter of fact, the last day we were below normal was the 11th of January, and so far, for the month of January, we are now 0.5 degree above normal. Considering how cold we started out, we're actually running slightly above normal. We'll probably stay that way for the next 48 hours.
Okie poke. Except that, and I will tell folks, if you can find a tree, a Christmas tree that's been chopped up, mulch, might be a good place, time to mulch your plants if you hadn't done it. And if you can get some, get them on, especially if it's going to be dry and cold, because that's really hard on them. That can be brutal in the dead of winter. Rick DeMaio Weather, he's here every week around 8:30. Thereabouts. Mm-hmm. He goes back to bed now, and
I know. I wanted, before you let me go, just give you one bit of information, Mike. I sent it to you early. This just came out from the Climate Diagnostic Center in Washington, D.C. 2009, globally, went down as the fifth warmest year since records have been taken since 1870. So we had 2005 was the warmest, 1998 was the second warmest, thanks to a strong El Nino, but it went down in the books that 2009, particularly not so much the land, but the ocean temperatures were the fourth warmest in the last 30 years.
There you go.
And the average temperature between the ocean and the land is up 1 degree Fahrenheit over the long-term average since 1871.
1.01 is what you sent me. Yeah, and the interesting thing is you sent me the global top 10. Of course, you sent me 11 dates, but that's, who's counting? those people say global warming isn't happening. Think again. There's the facts.
Just got to find a place where it's regionally, and that's where your news comes from, right?
Yeah. So what did you say?
What's that?
Regionally, where it's what?
Well, I mean, a couple of weeks we were talking about John Williams had a climate expert on and said, hey, it's cold here, it's snowing here, what happened to global warming? I'd like to send him this information. That'll see what he says.
Do that.
Right?
All right, send it to him. Of course, that station's collapsing right now, but that's another story altogether. All right, Rick DeMaio Weather, we'll talk next week. Thanks, buddy.
Bye, Mike. Bye.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Do you know that tree care is more dangerous than police work or firefighting? That's what a study by the University of South Dakota shows, and every year homeowners are injured or killed trying to do their own tree work. You should think twice before performing tree work of any kind, especially if it involves climbing, work from a ladder to prune a tree, and certainly attempting to cut down a tree. The problem is, in this economy, you're going to be tempted to do it yourself to save a couple of bucks. But the Care of Trees is fully insured to cover workers' compensation, property damage, and personal liability in case of accidents. Are you? With 9 locations, the Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years, putting you and your trees first. Make them your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Give the Care of Trees a call at 847-394-4220, 847-394-4220, or online at thecareoftrees.com, the Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
DR Services Unlimited has been providing Chicago's North Shore with award-winning remodeling and design-build services since 1991, giving their clients top-quality service and real value. They're on the cutting edge of green building technology, helping clients make their home more energy efficient without sacrificing beauty or function. If you want to make your home more energy efficient, simply want to add a room or renovate, call DR Services at 847-998-1687 or visit them at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
And after 9 o'clock, we're going to be back talking about the future of the Chicago area, transportation and other issues, how they're going to develop. I think you might want to stick around for that conversation. That's coming up after CNN News.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Podcasts of this program, along with green tips, valuable links, and DeMaio Weather, are a click away at MikeNovak.net. That's MikeNovak.net. Here he is, Mike Novak.
You know, sometimes you just got to play those songs that you remember cruising in the car in Detroit listening to, and this is one of them.
A good one for Lakeshore Drive as well.
Is that one?
Comes
is that
on
a good
when
one?
You hit Lakeshore Drive, it's like, oh yeah.
Randy, do you remember this one at all? I don't know.
I do remember this one. It's back in my time as well.
Yeah. but we see, we're not. The point is, we're not talking about the past now. We're gonna go charging into the future, because that's what you and the folks at CMAP are all about at this point. It's looking at regional scenarios and how we're going to develop as a how many county area here are we talking about?
We're a 7 county area. It's the traditional 6 counties that we've always had up here, and we've added Kendall County because before the housing bust, they were the fastest growing county in the country, and obviously tied to the Chicago area. So yeah, we're at a critical point in our planning process, and I'm happy to be here this morning.
That's Randy Blankenhorn, and I'm happy to have him back here. You're the CMAP Executive Director. CMAP stands for Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning. The link is on my website, or you could just, if you don't like going to my website, and you know, that's just crazy. You could go to cmap.illinois.gov and find this out. And Randy was on the program back in June. I looked it back. It was the 28th of June. You guys at that point, CMAP, had this website called Go to 2040. And right. The idea was that you could vote for the future of the area and how we're going to develop the area in terms of transportation and other issues, other environmental issues. How many folks ended up voting? Oh, and by the way, it was called Invent the Future. The idea is that you can have a say.
Exactly,
in,
Mike.
In what the future is going to be. How many people voted?
We ended up with about 20,000 people participating in one way or another, either through our website or we had 57 workshops around the region.
Mm-hmm.
We had a kiosk at Millennium Park where people could vote.
Yeah.
So we had a significant number of people, and it was an interesting summer. We spent a lot of time talking to people about what they care about, not only in transportation but environmental issues and housing and economic development. Obviously, we heard a lot about jobs this summer, and what are we going to do about jobs?
I'll bet you did, yeah.
So.
I mean, it had to have been an interesting time to hear people voting and hear their opinions because the economy was in the tank.
Right.
And, you know, if you'd done this 2 years ago, you'd have gotten perhaps a slightly different or maybe radically different response.
I think you're right. I think that what we heard was in some ways what we expected, but in a couple of ways, not at all. We heard that no matter where you were in this region, if you had public transit, you wanted better public transit, that it wasn't good enough. And out in the collar counties, they wanted public transit where they didn't have it. And I think that's a step that wasn't there before, that people are realizing there's got to be a new and different way to get around. When we talked about development, surprisingly, again, whether you're in Chicago or in DuPage County or in the Collars or in Cook, people are talking about more compact development, smaller lots, new downtowns, the kinds of things that we talk about of how do we bring people together, how do we make development more efficient. And I think that was a great step that might not have been there 2 years ago before this crash we're in.
You offered one of the things about the scenarios, you offered different things. You could tweak it yourself.
Right.
Because I voted on it, and I was playing, and we talked about it on the air, and the idea was you could say, do you want everything to remain the same, or do you want to change just this, or do you want to change that? What I want to know, and I think it was 15% of the people liked it the way it is. I want to whoop those people upside the head with a rolled up newspaper is what I want to do. It's like, are you kidding me with the sprawl we have? But most people went for this idea of regionalized population centers.
Yeah, I think that that's really what they were talking about was more mixed use, where people could walk more than they do today. Not that people aren't ever going to own cars again. They are. But where people could walk more, where centers were really what we were talking about. We're always going to have growth in suburban areas. I mean, we're going to add 2.8 million people in this region over the next 30 years. We're going to have suburban growth, and that's okay. It's how that growth happens, and can we do it in a different way? That's the 15% that we're talking about. How do we think about that?
I guess. I'm trying to just imagine who those people are, because the way we've done it in the past, I mean, what's so fascinating about what you're doing is that you're finally saying, let's plan this out. Let's not just have it happen. And when we've had it happen, we have sprawl that's uncontrollable, and it's not good for us because a lot of it means that we have concrete and asphalt that is not permeable, and the water is turned into poison because it runs into our sewers and it's mixed with oils and pesticides and everything else. Whereas, and the fact we're losing some of the most fertile land in the world when we just allow development to run unchecked.
And I think that's really what we want people to talk about is how do we think about it like that, Mike? How do we think about it so that we are more efficient in the way we use land? How do we use our natural resources better and not abuse them? And I think that's what we heard a lot, too, is that people are very concerned about the environment, where we're headed. How can we not only protect the environment but enhance the natural resources that are just such an asset to the Chicago region? It's what brings people here. It's the lakes, it's the streams, it's the parks. It's why people live where they do. And how do we do more of that, and how do we do it better?
That's CMAP Executive Director Randy Blankenhorn. He's in the studio. We're talking about Go to 2040. We're talking about the preferred regional scenario, and you handed me this fancy booklet that talks about this. And by the way, if you've got opinions about where our region should be going, you know, it might be too late to vote now, but I'm sure you continue to listen to people, don't you?
Absolutely. This the regional scenario is just an interim step in the plan. The plan isn't due until October. So we are still listening. We're still looking for input. This piece of the plan where we are today was to just make sure that we understood what people were thinking before we actually start to write something.
Yeah.
My biggest fear was that we'd start to write in as a staff and people would say, these aren't the things that are important to us. So that's what we spent this summer doing.
And you can call and voice your opinion at 773-838-9278. Hey, maybe you're one of those 15%. Likes things just the way they are. That's okay with me. Give me a call. 773-838-WCPT. And you got a set of headsets there because we actually do have a call, and it's from Bernie in Indiana. Hi, Bernie. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Pretty good. Pretty good. You know, if you took a line put around Chicago, isn't like the Indiana area that still has a lot of development should be pulled in rather than worrying about Kane County or out there in Gaga land where all that farm ground is being torn up?
Gaga land. Okay. I hadn't heard that phrase before, but I get your point, Bernie, in that the Indiana, especially Northwest Indiana, is really a huge part of what goes on in Chicago. What's your response to that, Randy?
I totally agree that we've got to think about the region bigger than artificial state lines, and they get drawn on a map. So many people in Northwest Indiana live there and work in the Chicago metropolitan area, so we've got to think about that. We've got to think about how that growth in Indiana affects us. We're talking about projects that how do we move people better? How do we make the mass transit system from Chicago to Northwest Indiana work better? We're looking at projects like the Ileana Expressway. Does that make sense to bring people in from Indiana more efficiently? But you're absolutely right. We can't just ignore Northwestern Indiana because there's a state line in the middle that business doesn't care about
and our
people don't care about.
Go ahead, Bernie.
One more question. How does race come into this picture?
Wow, you're getting to the heart of things, aren't you, Bernie?
When you look at Gary, Indiana, acres and acres and acres of empty, valuable land that's just sitting there because of the racial.
But that's not a race question. That's an economic question.
Really. Well,
you know,
and
I'm not going to deny that often race is tied into economics, but really, abandoned buildings is an economic question. How do we develop that? How do we create those centers that Randy was talking about earlier? If people want to live in more concentrated areas where you can walk to the supermarket, I'm from Detroit, Bernie, so I know what it's like to have a blighted area. If you go back to Detroit, it makes Gary, Indiana look like a well-populated city. There are acres and acres of spots there homes that don't exist.
Well, this has got to be thrown in the pot. I mean, this is just like you say, Detroit. It's nuts.
It is crazy that we've abandoned our cities, and that's one of the regions I think, or reasons that CMAP is looking at these scenarios to see how we can change the way we do that. Bernie, thanks. Those are very provocative questions, and I appreciate you calling. And Randy, let's get to that. I mean, how do you? First of all, one of the things that the question that Bernie brings up is, what is CMAP, and does it cross state lines, and what's the mandate?
Yeah, our mandate really is for the seven counties of northeastern Illinois. But having said that, there's an organization similar to ours called the Northwestern Indiana Regional Planning Commission that we work with every day. They're going to be in our offices Monday for a meeting of the senior staff because we realize that we can't look at these things separately.
Mm-hmm.
I like to talk about even simple things like we have bike paths that end at state lines. and 2 miles later they pick up on the other end. That just doesn't make any sense.
No, that and you know, and in talking about reaching over state lines, when you take certain organizations like Chicago Wilderness and Open Lands, they don't look at state lines. They look at the region as a whole.
Exactly, and I think that's the way we're headed. We're all headed. I mean, we all have statutory responsibilities. We're all created by somebody. But I think Open Lands and others are looking at it the right way. What is a region that makes sense? And truly, everything you look at is a different region. There's not a seven-county region that makes sense. There's a different region, in quotes, for transportation. Housing is a different size. Ecosystems are a different size. Water is a hugely different size. And so we've got to think about things where they make sense, not because of political boundaries.
Mm-hmm. And going back to the CMAP, Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, and the mandate, you take these recommendations, and who are you influencing? And how are you influencing them? I mean, folks want to know that if you're planning their future and trying to make something happen, 20,000 people obviously is a small number in the metropolitan area. And I know that you're doing other things besides just polling those people. You're doing studies and planning, but how is this all implemented then?
Yeah, and I think that's a really good question, Mike, because at the end of the day, most regional plans don't get implemented. They look nice, they might win an award, they sit on shelves, they look good on coffee tables, and that's all they're good for. We're really looking at this not so much as a plan, but an implementation strategy. If we're going to have more compact development, who needs to do what? Where do the resources come from?
Yeah,
how do you get a city
to do that? I mean, how do you get a municipality to say, hey, okay, stop spreading, we want to concentrate. You know, like Bernie was saying, how do we go into Gary, Indiana? How do we go into an area that has blight and say, and I've said this for years, why are we not rebuilding in our cities instead of spreading out? I mean, people are running, fleeing from cities, and I don't know if that is, like it was in the 70s, because I remember those days, and it was like nobody's going to live in a city, and now people come back to the city. And how do we encourage that to happen even more so that we don't cover up all of our natural resources, and then we do have some open lands left?
Yeah, I think that we are turning a corner in many metropolitan areas and cities in what makes a city attractive. It's the city of Chicago has done a great job in turning that flight around. It's pretty stable in its population, and it's actually growing a little bit. And it's because people realize that there are amenities in a city that you can't get other places, and that's got to be the way we sell cities. When we talk about places like Gary, Indiana, it's all about economic growth. We've got to bring jobs back to that area, or we're not going to bring anything else in there. When we look at vacant, pretty large vacant pieces of land on the south side of Chicago, how do we make these attractive so that we can bring jobs in, that brings residential in, that brings commercial in? How do we think about these things together? You can't just think about housing, or you just can't think about transportation. You got to think about them together, which is really the goal of this plan.
Which leads me back to my question, which is, who then are you sitting down with and hammering this out with? And how do average citizens have a voice?
I think that, to directly answer your questions, we're sitting down with mainly local and state and federal elected officials. They're the ones that have the ultimate say in where investments are made, in how development happens, how their zoning goes if they're going to expand their community. And we're talking to them about why it makes sense to do things differently. I think that we're talking about targeting investments to places that make sense. Do we need to build roads out where there isn't population today, and there
isn't
going to be?
You mean in Gaga land?
In Gaga land.
And that's actually a really good point. And when Bernie says Gaga land, you know what I would prefer is prefer Gaga land stay land,
right,
and not roads, and not asphalt, and not box stores, and not the sorts of things that's the old way. That's the old road we've gone down.
It really is, Mike. And I've talked to people in some of our suburban communities, and particularly our more rural growing communities, and we've talked about what it is they want to be when they grow up. How do they want to develop? And we talk about saving, and a lot of times we're talking about saving their downtowns. How do we make their downtowns viable again, where people want to be to shop, to live, to eat? It's not just coming in, picking up your dry cleaning, and leaving. And so how do we think about those? And then they say, well, we're going to build the strip mall out you know, 2 miles out of town, and then I ask, so you wonder why your downtown's going to die and why your traffic congestion's so bad.
Well, but that the problem is that's a tax base issue that's so attractive to politicians. They're locked into that sort of thing. And yet what they're creating are monstrosities. Randall Road, no offense to the people who live out that way, is a monstrosity. What's the one that goes south? LaGrange Road is a monstrosity. You go down those, and it's miles and miles and miles and miles of strip mall. And what have we done to our country? I don't find that attractive. I don't think even if people use those places, they don't find them attractive. You can't walk any place.
Right.
There are no sidewalks. How do you get from one of those places to another? And yet you've got these beautiful downtowns, a lot of them really nice. I mean, I have performed out in Glen Ellen, for example, for years, and they're working their butts off to save their downtowns, and they're just one of many communities that are trying to save their downtowns, and they're fighting a losing battle.
And it is a losing battle today, but I'm not sure it's a losing battle tomorrow, and I think that's what we're trying to promote. When you talk about communities that are doing this because it's the sales tax draw, one of the things this plan is going to talk about, and it's in the preferred scenario, is we've got to talk about taxes differently. We're going to talk about a new tax structure because basically taxes drive development. We have the kind of retail development because sales taxes drive our communities. We have the kind of residential development we have because it pays for our school. Are we incenting the right things? Are we thinking about how the tax structure
that?
Works? It's not going to be quick, Mike. There's no question.
Yeah, I mean, taxes, that's, you talk about a hot-button issue. The minute you start talking about taxes, all rational thought leaves the room.
Well, and I think that we like to start by saying we're not talking about raising taxes. We're talking about reallocating taxes. We're talking about having a tax system that not only incents the kind of development that we're talking about, but also actually gives our communities enough money to do their job. I like to say this summer, I spent a lot of time saying that government, no matter what we think, isn't free. If you want services, if you want infrastructure, it costs money. And the way our tax structure works now, our communities are really hurting.
Well, don't get me started on taxes, because I'm with you on that page, which is I'm so sick of people saying that the only way you do accomplish anything is to cut taxes, and that taxes is the only bad thing in the world. When you get your fire, you get your police, you get your schools, you get your army, and everybody says, you know, we've just got to keep cutting taxes until we have what left? What?
Right.
What's there? What's good, and where's the common good? There is no common good. I mean, you got to pay for it somehow.
That's exactly right, Mike. And I think, you know, we need to identify what is it that government should do, and we need to fund it appropriately.
That's CMAP Executive Director Randy Blankenhorn. He is here to talk about Go to 2040, and you can still go to 2040. The link is on my website, and oddly enough, the website for GoTo 2040 is www.goto2040.org. And you can see some of the plans, the regional scenario, preferred regional scenario. So what's in this that we haven't talked about right now?
I think a couple of things that we haven't talked about is we haven't talked about one thing that surprised me in its importance. And I have to say that our staff told me 2 years ago this was going to be important, and I wasn't so sure, and that's local food and access to local food.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because that's become a huge issue, and I've become really aware of it, and I talk about it a lot on my program. How does it the regional scenario affected by local food?
Well, I think we're looking at it in two or three different ways. One is from a straight health situation, that we have to provide more healthy food, and particularly in neighborhoods and communities that don't have access to it. The second is we're looking at it as an agricultural protection issue. How do we protect that open land that we have that is productive agriculture that we can find new and close markets for? You know, why are we continuing to ship food in from the West Coast every day?
1,500 miles from farm to plate.
Right, and that just doesn't make any sense when we have the world's best farmland out here.
Yeah. And as you know, and I've said it over and over again, I'm going to keep beating people over the head with it until they realize it, 5% of what we put on our plates in Illinois is actually grown in Illinois, 5%, 5%.
Right.
And we need to change that.
Yeah, and I think the third way we're looking at local food is truly as an economic. How do we make farming successful? How do we make sure that the next generation of farmers has a market? And so we're looking at it really from the health, from the access issues, and then from economic development. And I think it's become, I will admit, surprisingly to me, really a top issue for us.
Well, if we're paving over Gaga land, then there aren't going to be any farmers.
Right.
And if they don't have incentive, and part of the problem with the way things are set up, and I'm not going to drag you into the whole issue of the factory farms and the big corporate giants who, you know, have a stranglehold on farmers. We got to get farmers out from under the corn and soybeans mentality.
Right.
So they can, a lot of farmers don't know how to grow anything else.
Right.
They know how to grow corn and soybeans because that's all they've done for the last 30 years. And it's going to be a re-education issue if we're going to get our farmers back. And I mean real farmers.
And that's what we mean, too, is real farm, not necessarily corporate farming. And that is another day's discussion. But really, we need to give farmers not only an opportunity to sell, but a reason to hold their land, to not sell it for development. If they can't make money farming, then they have to look for other choices.
And how do you get them to hang on at this point before you can implement these plans and make it viable?
I think that Kane County, for example, in buying development rights is an interim solution where you're giving farmers some income today in return for them not selling it for anything but farming in the future. I don't think that's a lasting way to do it, but as an interim step, I think that's a good step to hang on to those pieces that are really critical.
And then find the farmers somehow.
And then find the farmers. We've got to tell our kids that farming is not just a way of life, which it is, but it's also can be a real job.
Well, and that's what I'm talking about on this show is urban agriculture. And when I say urban agriculture, it's actually a big tent. It is urban and it's suburban and it's exurban. And we're going to all learn together.
Right.
How that works so that you can live anywhere and farm it if you need to and if you want to. All right, so you've got your booklet, which came out
this week
on the 21st,
right?
My birthday.
Yes,
I keep mentioning everything happens on my birthday, Heather. have you noticed that? It's like
the most depressing day of the year.
The most depressing day of the year, exactly. And so you produce this booklet. Next step.
Next step really is to talk about the major capital projects that really support this plan, whether they're water and sewer infrastructure, transportation infrastructure, transit, other things. We'll spend the spring doing that. We'll have a draft of the final plan out in June. And at that point, we're going to want to be out on the road again talking to people about what they think.
Ooh, and then the hard stuff, right? The sell job.
And really, we say as a staff that the real work begins when the plan's done, not developing a plan, and that's where we're headed.
Because once you sell it, how long are you giving yourself that part of the project, and then you move on to what?
Well, I don't think the selling is ever done. We call this go-to 2040, but I call it a plan for the 21st century. I mean, I think the selling goes on for a long time. I think that we have to keep up on, is the plan headed the right direction? Are we getting the results we want and making adjustments? But it's really about implementation. It's not about the planning.
That's Randy Blankenhorn, the executive director of the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning. Let's take one more phone call here. We'll go to line one. John, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you today?
Good, thanks, on this great day.
Hey, yeah, really. Yeah, enjoy the wetness while you can.
In talking about planning on the future, I was just thinking about our friend the Asian carp and what's new on that. And, as citizens, what can we do about that?
That's interesting that you should bring it up, John. I thought about it while I was sitting here talking to Randy, and I thought, do I blindside him with that, or do I see what happens and where we go? Because what you're talking about is a regional issue, and that's just one of those, just one of dozens of regional issues that are going to come up. How does your organization deal with something like that, Randy?
Well, I think this is an interesting issue because almost everywhere I go, people want to talk to me about it, and I'm not a biologist, and so it's hard for me to say. But I do think that this is the kind of regional issue that isn't just Illinois. It's the whole Great Lakes that we're dealing with here, and how do we think about it? I guess I usually respond by saying, this is why the Department of Natural Resources at the state of Illinois is so important to us and why we need to fund them better than we do today, because we need that science. We need them to find the answers of how we're going to keep it out of the lake and what we're going to do with it.
That's a really good point about funding the DNR.
And paying taxes, yeah.
John, you're right. It's how do we fund the DNR if there's no money? Our friends who don't like taxes, I want to say you're going to do a bake sale so we can have scientists.
Right. I mean, that's, you know, you can sell admission to state parks for a lot of things, but probably not to hire scientists to solve this problem. And so where does the money come from? How do you reallocate it to make sense?
But there's another issue here, too, which is you can get the scientists to tell you what they think, and then you've got... You know, you've got the state, you've got executive, you've got local municipalities, you've got all kinds of different agencies. I mean, here we are, one state suing another to get Illinois to take action. Who's ultimately responsible for the water that comes into the Great Lakes? I mean, we've got a jurisdictional problem here.
Well, I can throw in one more thing, and then I'll just listen off air. But
okay.
The economic impact of shutting down the canal versus, you know, Asian carp in the lakes. What kind of economic impact? Is there any study on that? I mean,
well, you know, what happens right now? That's a really good question, John. And
I'll just listen off air.
All right, thanks for calling, buddy.
All right, thanks.
Sure. You know, I look at that question, and I've heard quotes about the economic impact of that traffic that goes through the locks. But you know what? If it doesn't go through the locks, it'll go on trucks. And I understand that there's an issue also with carbon footprint. I mean, there's a lot of issues here. But the money will still be spent somehow to get the stuff moved. And in all likelihood, it's a temporary problem until we fix the Asian carp. My point is a bigger point, which is who's ultimately responsible, and how does CMAP and Invent the Future and Go to 2040 play into this?
Well, who's ultimately responsible in this case is a really tough question. I mean, the states have agreements. The states that surround the Great Lakes have agreements on how all of it is supposed to work, but not what you do with invasive species. And
right.
So it's really a question that we would hate to see not in the courts, but if there is one, that's probably where it is. I think this is the kind of thing where Illinois has to step up and say, we understand there's a problem. We understand that we have to be the majority of the solution here and figure out what that is. I hope that it's not shutting down the locks, because there are economic impacts. Every decision like this has trade-offs. You know that.
Sure.
And putting... You know, putting things on trucks is not the answer really that we're looking for.
I know it's not.
But it could happen.
It could happen, and maybe it's a temporary fix, and maybe it doesn't happen at all. But the problem I have is knowing that the state of Illinois is ground zero for this. All right, I don't feel, and I could be wrong about this, I don't have a sense that they've got it under control and that there is anybody who's taking charge. I want the grown-ups in charge. I don't see any grown-ups. I only see people being defensive and saying, well, if they sue us, we'll fight. Well, that's not an answer. That's, you know, that's a response.
Exactly. And that's why I said I think we as a state have to be proactive. I think it has to be led by the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, by DNR. They have the technical expertise, and then we have to listen to them. We have to listen to what they think the best answer is, and they can't do a study for 3 years to figure it out. We need to...
Right, exactly. That study's got to be done in a few weeks or
right.
a couple of months or whatever. I mean, let's get the people with the knowledge out there. It may be too late already. If they found DNA in Lake Michigan, this may be a moot point.
Right. We hope not, but it may be. And if it is it can we control it now until we can figure out where to go next?
But that's getting us kind of off course here, and I'm sorry, but
that's okay.
But that's okay, John. I'm glad you asked the question because it popped into my head too. But I guess all in all, it sort of highlights the kinds of issues that you've got to deal with for the region.
It really does, and just because something's not in our go to 2040 preferred scenario at this point really doesn't mean that we don't deal with it. We deal with a lot of policy issues every day. We think that in the state of Illinois in particular, it's time to be serious about our policy issues. It's
again, let's get the grown-ups in charge.
Let's get somebody talking about real solutions. Whatever they might be, let's have a real discussion. We can't continue not to make decisions any longer.
Well, yeah, I will argue also that... Okay, let me ask a question. Who in the country is doing successful planning, regional planning?
I think that if you look at different aspects of regional planning, certain areas do good job of certain pieces.
I mean, like, you look at Oregon, and for a long time, they had really strict controls on growth.
Right.
But people repealed that law, and I think it was a mistake.
And it really was a difficult thing. I mean, Portland has much stronger regional land use control than we are ever going to have in Illinois. And so that's part of the issue.
That's good. I think it's great because, if you can just look around and see that without the control, we're losing valuable resources.
But having said that, the president of, it's called Metro, their regional agency in Portland, came to see us this summer, and they said they were the model of the past. CMAP is the model of the future, of how we look at things much more broadly, because they really were just looking at housing and land use and transportation. We're looking at all the other policy issues. I think that there are places, Philadelphia does a great job with some natural resource planning for an urban area. San Francisco does a great job in housing planning. But we're trying to do something that's much more comprehensive than's been done before. So there's not a model out there. We're kind of making it up as we go.
Well, that's good. I mean, I like the idea that Chicago might be the model for the country. That's a good thing. All right. All the information is on my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show, and you can find the information about Go to 2040, about CMAP. And, Randy, you're going to be back on the show in June.
I will be back as soon as we're ready to talk about a draft plan, and thanks again.
I want to talk about the draft plan and see where we're going. And then when it all hits the fire in after that, and you're really trying to get things done and you're getting all the blowback, then we're going to talk about that too and see what happens.
Well, and it is. It'll be fun. It'll be a fun year for us. But I think being able to talk to you and your listeners and getting them to understand how important it is such a big help to us. Thanks.
Well, I like having you on the show, and let's do it again, all right?
Great. Thanks, Mike.
All right. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We're going to go to a little more, down to earth, Rudy kind of thing, growing fruit in Chicago. Let's do that. Let us get Dave Snyder on the phone. Meanwhile, are you familiar with Aldo Leopold? I bet Randy Blankenhorn is. He's considered the father of wildlife ecology. He was a renowned scientist and scholar, teacher, philosopher, and writer. It's for his book, A Sand County Almanac, that Leopold is best known by millions of people around the globe. The Almanac is a literary landmark in conservation. It combines poetic prose with observations of the natural world, and it led to a philosophy that has guided many to discovering what it means to live in harmony with the land and with each other. Now, that being said, my good friends at WRD Environmental would like you to remember something that Aldo Leopold wrote. He said, "The outstanding scientific discovery of the 20th century is not television or radio, but rather the complexity of the land organism. Only those who know the most about it can appreciate how little we know about it. The last word in ignorance is the man who says of an animal or plant, what good is it? If the land mechanism as a whole is good, then every part is good, whether we understand it or not. If the biota, in the course of eons, has built something we like but do not understand, then who but a fool would discard seemingly useless parts? To keep every cog and wheel is the first precaution of intelligent tinkering." At WRD Environmental, we not only appreciate the complexity of the region's ecology, but are dedicated to protecting, restoring, and healing it. They create sustainable landscapes from large-scale master planning to community pocket parks. For innovative, sustainable landscape development, choose WRD Environmental, located at the Chicago Center for Green Technology and online at WRDEnvironmental.com. Now, we're still in the middle of winter, and even though it's raining, and it's even in the 40s, it's a little early to get outside, so one of the things you want to pay attention to are your indoor plants, and you can take care of them and give them a little TLC with some help from SIDS Greenhouses. SIDS has got the right soil mixes and fertilizers for every plant. Do remember, this is not time to fertilize yet. What you're going to do is you go to SIDS, you line it up, you're ready to go. You get your fertilizer, and then in a couple of months, you start a little bit and get the plants going. As they get more light, they're going to be able to utilize it better. And SIDS has just received a truckload shipment of pottery. Of course, they have a great selection of lush tropical houseplants as well. Houseplants not only look great, they also help improve indoor air quality. And now's the time also to start thinking about seeds for your gardens and getting those started indoors. SIDS shipment of flower and vegetable seed packets is in, and the popular varieties go fast, so visit SIDS early for the best selection, including certified organic seeds. SIDS Chicagoland's premier garden centers are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. Okay, I have no idea what we got up here, Heather, so it's, once again, it's CD roulette.
Ooh.
I don't know the selection. We just hit it. And
after those wolf calls earlier, now I have a craving to hear Warren Zevon.
I don't have any Warren Zevon here. Let's see what this is. Oh, this is good. You got to like it.
It's my favorite.
Wow. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And you know, when you play that song as a musical introduction, you can always say something like, if you want to talk about a revolution, how about the idea of going into an urban area and growing fruit trees? How's that work for you, Dave Snyder?
Oh, that works just fine for me.
Dave is with a group called CROP, which stands for Chicago Rarities Orchard Project. And you guys are having a big event tomorrow night at Uncommon Ground Restaurant on Devon in Chicago. Tell me about it.
Well, we're having this fundraiser. The folks up at Uncommon Ground, Helen and Michael Cameron, have they've been real supportive of us for a while now. And what they've decided to do is they've, at their restaurant up there at Uncommon Ground, you know, it's a restaurant and a bar and a music venue and all these different things, they've put together a specialty cocktail. It's going to be this branded cocktail, and every time anybody buys one of these cocktails, 50 cents from the price of the cocktail is going to be donated to CROP, to our organization.
So what's the cocktail? Do you know what it is?
Well, they're keeping tight-lipped on this. It's going to be a surprise for me. They've put this thing together. They ran a naming contest too. And they got a good name for it. Their bartenders have developed this specialty cocktail. I don't even know what it's going to be, but it's going to be unveiled tomorrow night. It'll be my first time seeing this thing, and it's going to be really fun.
And we're drinking it, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. We're going to be toasting Uncommon Ground and toasting fruit trees and urban agriculture.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, it's a great place, Uncommon Ground, and they, of course, they've been on the program, and they have the first organic rooftop farm in America, and they're very supportive of the urban agriculture movement, and I'm glad they're doing this. So what time does this all start?
It starts at 6 o'clock, and you can get your tickets ahead of time at you can go to our website, chicagorarities.org, and you can there's a link to where you can get tickets from there, but you can also just come by the restaurant. And you can just come by at 6 o'clock and come in right there. We're charging $20 for it. It's because it's a fundraiser. But
of course, I mean, if you're going to have a fundraiser, you got to raise funds.
Yeah, that's what I think. You know, but you know, if you come by and you pay the admission, we'll give you one of these complimentary cocktails, and there'll be hors d'oeuvres, and there's going to be music, and it's just going to be a whole lot of fun. We're going to get together, and I'm going to talk about our project, and Helen's going to talk about Uncommon Ground and all the stuff that they're doing, and it's just going to be a real fun time. And you know, I'm just looking forward to talking to like-minded, interested folks.
I met you, Dave, at one of their events. They do these green room sessions on Thursdays various times during the year. And I was fascinated by the idea of the Chicago Rarities Orchard Project. And by the way, your link is on my website, too. Just go to MikeNovak.net, this week's show. It's all up there. Our conversation will be, by the end of the day, posted on my audio page, so you can listen to the entire show. You're talking about the... Talk about the Logan Square deal. Is that
this is open. This is open source, man. We can talk about this.
Okay, but I didn't know whether it was just between you and me. Of course, I already wrote about it on the website, so it better be open. Your idea of talk about how your group formed and what you're planning to do.
Well, the idea is what we want to do is we want to start these community orchards in Chicago, and we're basing the idea after a community garden, just with trees instead of annual vegetables, which in one way isn't so different than a community garden model, but another way there you don't see too many of them. And a lot of people don't start an urban orchard because the return on investment takes so long. It takes, you know, where if you plant some spinach seeds in the ground, you know, 40 days later, 45 days later, you'll be eating spinach. It might take 5 or 6 or 7 years for your tree to grow and start producing fruit. So I think it scares a lot of people off. But I kind of thought when I'd move to Chicago and if I planted a tree the day I moved to Chicago, well, we'd be, you know, we would have been eating those apples last fall, which, you know, so the amount of time is not.
Let's put it this way. It goes a lot faster than you want it to, okay? When
right.
You get to a certain age, you realize that, where did that last 20 years go? But you're right. It requires some faith. It also requires a spot that isn't that is land you know you're going to have in 7 years. Now, how do you ensure that?
Well, thankfully, Chicago is very lucky to have an organization called NeighborSpace, which I'm sure you know about NeighborSpace, but for some of your listeners, NeighborSpace is this organization that helps gardeners in the city acquire land that they can garden on. And for the most part, it's folks, you know, Chicago has this long tradition of folks just gardening on unused land. But, you know, a lot of times the future of that land may be up in the air. And what NeighborSpace does is that NeighborSpace works very closely with the city to actually acquire lots on behalf of those gardeners. And as long as the gardeners continue to use that land for the selected purpose, and, you know, for our case, growing fruit trees, it can't be sold and it can't be sold out from under us. And we can, for in perpetuity, keep using that land. So we're working with NeighborSpace, and NeighborSpace has been exceedingly helpful and generous with us, and has really been a liaison between us and the city to help us find a likely site in the city. And right now, what you were talking about before, the site in Logan Square, is we're looking at this lot in Logan Square, which I think is going to be, if everything goes together well, it's going to be an absolutely perfect place for us. It's going to have good light and exposure, but it's also going to have incredibly high visibility and accessibility, so a lot of people can actually come to our site.
I just think that's fabulous, and I'll certainly be there picking whatever. What kind of trees are you going to grow?
Well, we're going to grow a mixture of things. We're definitely going to grow a bunch of apple trees, because apples actually represent a particular problem with crop preservation. You know, 100 years, there were 15,000 varieties of named apples in America alone, and since then, 90% have gone extinct. And this is a real issue. We're not the only people concerned about the Global Crop Diversity Trust. This international multi-million-dollar organization has listed apples as one of their critical species to preserve. So we're going to grow a bunch of apple trees, but we're going to grow a bunch of other heritage fruits too. You know, I don't think I actually mentioned, you know, our orchard is going to be dedicated to rare and endangered varieties of fruit. So all these varieties of apples that people aren't commonly growing, pears, stone fruits, things that grow in pretty well in the Chicago region. And something else that we want to grow is this, you know, this fruit, the pawpaw, which a lot of people don't know about, but it's actually a native fruit to this region. It tastes, it's this amazing, it kind of looks like this long green mango, but it tastes like banana vanilla custard. It's unbelievable.
I know,
man.
And I don't think I've ever had a pawpaw.
I have.
You have,
yes.
Heather? Okay.
They're good, aren't they?
In Florida, yes. They were. It was delicious.
See, now, why would you have one in Florida when they grow up here?
Exactly.
Know?
But I was down there. It was a buffet. They had, you know, the fruit table to end all fruit tables, and it was there.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. If you're doing it in Logan Square, I will help you dig in those plants.
Fantastic, man. I'm so glad.
That's my neighborhood, and we'll take pictures and stuff. But all right, so tomorrow night, Uncommon Ground. And you and I, we'll talk more about rare plants, rare trees, and growing fruit trees, rare fruit trees, and hence the name, Chicago Rarities Orchard Project.
Right.
Or crop. And again, the website is chicagorarities.org, or you can go to my website, mikenovak.net, and get the link. Go to Uncommon Ground, 6 to 8 p.m. tomorrow night. It's only $20. They're going to name a new drink, as of yet, not revealed.
Right.
And it's all in honor of crop, and Dave Snyder will be there. And I hope it goes really well for you, Dave.
Well, thanks very much, Mike.
We'll talk again real soon, all right?
I look forward to it, Mike. Thanks so much for having me on.
No problem. The January-February edition of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is out on the newsstands, and I've got the inside scoop on why you should pick up a copy. Well, first of all, if you're a Chicago-area gardener, this is a must-have publication. Not just this issue, but every issue. However, this is the Get Ready for the Gardening Year edition, which means there are stories about how to interpret what's on a seed packet, how to set up grow lights for when those packets arrive and you start raising your little plant babies. Then there's the calendar that tells you what to do in the garden all year long, month by month. This issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine even has a three-hole punch. Yes, it does. So you can put it right into your gardening binder. This is the garden magazine for our region, which means Chicago and environs. You can find Chicagoland Gardening Magazine in your local store or garden center. More than 800 new newsstand locations have been added in the last couple of months. But why trudge out to the store when you can have it delivered to your home? There's even a guy named Mike who writes a column in the back of the magazine, and even Heather reads that column. Right, Heather?
It's the best part of the whole magazine.
And I pay her to say that. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or give them a call, 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. We've got a call waiting. Mickey, I'm going to be with you in just a sec.
DR Services Unlimited has been providing Chicago's North Shore with award-winning remodeling and design-build services since 1991, giving their clients top quality service and real value. They're on the cutting edge of green building technology, helping clients make their home more energy efficient without sacrificing beauty or function. If you want to make your home more energy efficient, simply want to add a room or renovate, call DR Services at 847-998-1687 or visit them at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
You know DR Services. That's Ron Cowgill's outfit. Those Ron and Joe Builder are on location again. I don't know how they get to go off to all those fancy places. Today it's Prairie Stone Sports and Wellness Center in Hoffman Estates, 5050 Sedge Road in Hoffman Estates. There's another home show. That's the home show they're at today. They're broadcasting live at 10 o'clock. Tune in. Or even better, head on out if you're out in Hoffman Estates area and you want to go to the Prairie Stone Sports and Wellness Center at 5050 Sedge Road. You can say hi. Harass Joe. That's leave Ron alone and just go out there and make faces at Joe, basically.
Yeah, Ron's the guy to ask if you really want to learn how to fix something or build something.
Joe is the guy you harass,
yes.
Right? Is that it?
Yes.
Okay. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Did you know that this is prime time for tree inspection? In winter, it's easier to spot some problems like weak branch attachments or insect damage, not as visible through dense foliage during the growing season. If your trees have cables and braces in them, it's just sad. Those adolescent trees with braces.
Yeah.
They're just...
They get teeth.
Yeah, they do.
All the fertilizer gets stuck in their teeth. The woodpeckers are like, I'm not pecking you.
Anyway, that hardware should be inspected and flossed every few years to make sure it's intact, in serviceable condition, or in need of adjustments or replacement. I don't know how long carrot trees is going to stick with me. With the leaves gone, your arborist has a clear view of the tree's cable and bracing work, and winter pruning, when sap is not running, can help prevent the spread of certain diseases. With 9 locations and their fabulous people, the Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years, putting you and your trees first. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well... I'm sorry. With the trees, I held on as long as I could. With the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees, and that's the biggest darn floss you've ever seen
I bet.
In your life. We're in the home stretch here on the Mike Novak Show on a Sunday. I want to thank you all for listening. Anybody who's been here, if you listened for the first time, hey, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you go to my website, MikeNovak.net. I hope you write to me, Mike@MikeNovak.net, N-O-W-A-K. Before we get out of here, let's go to line 2 and bring in Mickey. How you doing, Mickey?
Great. Hey, I was calling to say thanks for the tickets that you gave us to the Porter Counter Master Gardening Show this weekend.
That was yesterday, right?
Yes, it was on Saturday. We were there. What a great day. I think we were there at least with 500 or 600 other people.
Wow.
It was a really big show. They had over 100 vendors, and they had the programs going on during the day, and we got to sit down in a few of those. And
did you see Connor Shaw by any chance?
We did not.
Okay.
We did not. Let's see that one. But we got in on the Four Seasons of Garden Interest and the soil from the ground up plant growing, and just really had a great time. And the really great part of it was that seed and bulb exchange.
Yeah.
They think it's the largest in the country, and I have to agree with them. They had heirloom varieties and, I mean, thousands upon thousands of packets of seed, and it was a really great show.
It is, you know, I've only been doing it for 7 years. I imagine it's just going to get bigger and better. You know, one of the things I like is the fact that I get a lot of people in Indiana listening to the program here. I get a lot of calls from Indiana, and some of the great shows go on out there, and I've always been happy to be part of them, and I'm glad that you were able to head over there and see this one. And that, yeah, you're right, that seed exchange just sounds great. What'd you pick up?
Oh, my gosh. I picked up some heirloom varieties of things. I picked up some gourd seeds, some different kinds of peppers, and a number of different flowers, some sunflower seeds, and a really nice, you know, they had such a variety to choose from. It was really hard to get around the tables, and they also had bulbs that they were exchanging, and I've got some plant seeds that I've never heard of, so I'll be interested to see what happens in the garden.
Let me know how they go. I'm glad you won the tickets, and I'm glad you were able to get out there. Thanks, Mickey. I really appreciate you calling in.
Thank you very much.
And that's it. That's what we call a wrap. Let's go home. Let's get wet. Watch a little football, you know, see who. And I know you're pulling for.
I'm pulling for New Orleans.
Because you can't pull for Brett.
I can't. He's so good, he angers me.
I like him because he's the old guy.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for the old guy.
Well,
but you know what? If either one of them wins, fine.
I just want to see the Saints do it. They deserve it. Brett's had his time in the limelight. It's New Orleans' turn.
Stand by for Mighty House. As I said, they are out on location. And Hoffman Estates, I hope you'll call and give them a question. It's the Mike Novak Show.